Blogging the Boys presents Cowboys Radio with Rabs and McCool. Here are your hosts, Rabble Rouser and Landon McCool.
Hello, howdy, and welcome to another edition of Blogging the Boys Cowboys Radio, live from Blogging the Boys Studio in Oxnard, California, at the beautiful La Quinta Camarillo. We are here to give you our first actual together Rabs and McCool podcast. Rabs, how's it going?
Well, as you just said, for the first time we're together, and it's kind of weird and kind of awesome. But generally, I'm very stoked. We're right in the middle of our deep immersion Cowboys nerd weekend. We've got one practice in the books, and we're going to go see the second practice later this afternoon. And, you know, deep immersion with the Cowboys is always a great thing.
Yeah, so we got kind of an interesting podcast today because we last night we spent, and some of you may have already seen it up on Blogging the Boys, we spent the last night kind of taking a couple hours to go ahead and rank the roster 1 through 90, which is funny because, first of all, the roster changes at such a quick pace. And as I should point out, one of these guys who we have ranked in here is actually no longer on the team, we just found out right before we started this podcast. So we'll point that out along the way. But I think we did a pretty admirable job of ranking the 90, don't you think?
I do, I think. One of the things we commented on as we were doing it is how much easier it was this year than it was last year.
Absolutely.
I think that's not because we suddenly became more proficient at ranking, mm-mm, but because this roster is so much clearer.
So we'll go through the whole 1 through 90. We're going to also obviously kind of focus on the 53 that we think will be on the team, or at least, that's the good thing about this team is that there's about 60 guys we think that are going to be making an impact on this team. So whether we're not exactly sure of those 60 will be the actual 53, but we'll talk about those, those top kind of 60 players, the guys that actually could be playing for the Cowboys on games day. And then in this last part of the podcast, we're going to have Dan Turner, who's out here as well, made all the trip all the way across the pond and to here to Oxnard. And he's been on the sideline every day for practice. So we thought it'd be kind of cool to get him in and get kind of a blind look at the 1 through 90 and see exactly what he thought his impressions were. So before we get into it, I want to, of course, go ahead and say you guys should be making sure that you've been checking out all articles, not just the 1 through 90, on Blogging the Boys. Make sure you check out their Facebook page, Blogging the Boys, and follow them on Twitter, at Blogging the Boys. And, of course, you're going to hear this podcast on that site as well. So let's go ahead and jump right into it, shall we?
Let's do it.
So I figure the best way to kind of go in about this is that we'll go actual from 1 to 90. I thought maybe we could go 90 to 1, but I think that's going to make for no oomph at the beginning of the podcast at all.
Right. We would need Casey Kasem here with us to like do the countdown.
And coming in at number 90, this is all the way back for Casey Kreider. All right. If you have the ability, you should probably follow along with us on this list on Blogging the Boys. The article has the full list, and as well as our thoughts on it. So we're just going to kind of go through the list 10 at a time and kind of point out interesting things we think about each grouping of 10, justify our rankings, I guess, to a certain degree, and then kind of maybe have brief discussions about it. So, okay.
I think before we do that, it's important that we quickly outline what our criteria were.
Yes. And this was something that we, I think, had more of a discussion about before we did this whole exercise, a little bit more than we did last year. Last year,
correct,
it was kind of just you had the cards and we were just doing this for fun. And this time we kind of maybe took a little bit more of a scientific approach to it. But having said that, it is very interesting, just to kind of speak meta about this real quick, it is very interesting to compare this year's list going back to last year's list and how similarly we ranked a whole bunch of these players. So I guess that kind of justifies or makes me feel better about our rankings, that okay, we're not maybe just doing this randomly, maybe we actually kind of have pinned these guys a little bit. So that makes me feel good. But yes, it is kind of about, and just to launch into what the actual process is, we considered You know, skins of the wall, past performance, pedigree, all those things are figuring in. We also wanted to weigh in and weigh kind of pretty decently heavily what we've seen lately, what, you know, the latest information we've gotten from these guys in preseason games and in training camp. I mean, you specifically have been out there every single day, and I've been out there enough, and you know, we all watched the preseason game multiple times to kind of get a feel for how each of these guys are playing currently. So we wanted to make sure that pedigree was in there. We wanted to make sure that, you know, NFL, you know, experience and skins of the wall was a part of the ranking, but we didn't want to make this a ranking based on no information from the preseason. So we definitely have included what we've seen and what we've heard other people talk about as far as, you know, training camp practices, preseason games. And I think that should basically sum up. Is there more to it?
No, I think that's right. I think that's right. So for example, we wanted to weigh what we've seen, but we didn't want that to outweigh what we saw every game last year.
Yeah, as we also didn't want to go too far the other way, where it's right. Just a basis on a ranking of 1 through 90 based on training camp.
Precisely. So let me offer one illustrative example. We have DeMarcus Lawrence rated as the 14th best player in the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
Last year at this time, we had him rated 25th. I don't know at the end of the season that he might not even have been 25th, because a lot of guys really took big leaps forward from training camp to the end of the year last year. But he's also, in my estimation and in the estimation of other people who've been watching, the most improved player on the Cowboys mm-hmm. thus far in camp. He's taken a gigantic leap forward. He's transformed his body, as we've mentioned on this podcast in the past. And so that's not enough to make him suddenly be in the top five. But we you know, I think it's that leap of 11 spots from 25 to 14 is indicative of what being the most improved player can do for somebody. But we still had to ground that in where he was at the end of the year last year.
Yeah, so it's almost like the past performance is kind of the starting point, and then we adjusted based on their performance in the last few weeks.
That's right.
All right, so let's go ahead and get started here. I'll just go ahead and list 1 through 10 real quick, and then we'll kind of get into it. So number 1 is Tyron Smith. Number 2 is Dez Bryant. Number 3 is Zach Martin. Number 4 is Tony Romo. Number 5 is Dan Bailey. Number 6 is Greg Hardy. Number 7 is Jason Witten. Number 8, Travis Frederick. Number 9, Tyrone Crawford. And number 10, Sean Lee. So this is also the interesting part about this is that we did this last night, so this is actually our first time to kind of look at this with fresh eyes a little bit. What sticks out to you immediately, and then talk about specifically Tyron Smith and what makes him the best player on the team?
Okay, that's good. The thing that leaps out to me is the jump that Zach Martin made.
Yeah.
So Zach Martin last year at this time was our 9th rated player, which is, you know, I mean, obviously fairly impressive for a guy who had been with the Cowboys for only a couple of months. But you know, he's not only has he did he have a stellar rookie season, but he has been incredibly impressive in camp. He's so strong. His core strength is ridiculous.
It really is.
And you know, there have been time, and we saw this actually happen last year, but we've seen this again in drills. Let's just, as a side note, it's been a real treat to see him go head-to-head against Tyrone Crawford.
Oh, my God.
In the pod drills.
And Greg Hardy, too. Yeah. And just to go, I mean, every time I see those two lining up, whatever else is going on, that's what I pay attention to, because it's just awesome to watch him sit, plant, and then they get bent back but not move. It's unbelievable.
Right. And so the getting bent back but not moving is exactly the thing that I'm talking about, because I think that indicates just how ridiculous, sort of like superhuman and otherworldly his core strength is. The fact that he can manage, sometimes he's not even, I mean, he's on his heels or he's on the balls of his feet, he's bent back, and yet the guy in front of him isn't moving.
Isn't moving anywhere.
Because he's engaging this ridiculous, he's got like 2 extra layers of muscle in his core.
And it's like, it's almost like a sleeper hold, because the guy's like trying to fight through it until he's just too tired to go on. And he just can't go on, and then he just leaves.
So he'll allow leverage and somehow still win the snap. Okay, so that's the first thing. Zach Martin is if he's not the very best player at his position.
And let me say,
he's awfully close.
And let me say too about the jump he made. He made the jump from 9 to 3, right, which is 6 spots. But let's talk about the 6 spots. I mean, when you talk about moving 6 spots in the top 10, that is tough sledding. That's not like moving from 53 to 47. I mean, like that's mm-hmm. a really competitive group at the top, and getting any kind of headway is difficult. So, which leads me to real quick before we get into Tyron Smith, the other guy who has made the really big jump that you've mentioned already is Tyron Crawford, who's at number 9, who was at 16 last year. That, again, not quite as impressive as from 9 to 3, but still impressive nonetheless, the jump that he's made on this team.
Absolutely. And we talked about it just earlier today. The, you know, when you see Tyron Crawford going up against Zach Martin every day in practice, and oftentimes getting stymied, as you were just describing, we think, well, Tyron Crawford's made, he's better, but is he really that much better? And then you see him against San Diego just playing with guys, and you go, oh right.
Zach.
That's an indication of how good Zach is.
Exactly.
And so the fact that these two guys are going against each other every day in camp is
they're making themselves so much
really
better.
Good for both of them.
Exactly.
And I think they're both poised for, you know, all pro caliber seasons. Yes, and so Tyron Crawford, you know, has been everything that people were thinking he might be in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
He's been fantastic. He's strong. He's fast. He's developed an array of pass rush moves. He's becoming savvy on the inside. You know, he was sort of learning on the fly yesterday. I think he's going to be really impressive. So let's move to Tyron Smith if we can.
Yeah.
Why are the best player? Simply put, he's been. I can't say he's been perfect in camp, but he's been so close.
I literally can only think of one thing the only one time he's ever been beat that I've been noticing.
One time, and that was a time when Greg Hardy managed to slap his hands away. Mm-hmm. And so this is the lesson. If he gets his hands on you, we hear this, but oftentimes we hear it sort of like, shut down corner. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no such thing as a shut down corner. There's no such thing as a guy who gets his hands on you and stops you every time.
Yeah.
Except now there
Except
is.
Tyron Smith is that
and,
guy,
and
yeah.
Every day in camp, if he gets his hands on someone, that guy is neutralized.
Mm-hmm.
He's immobilized.
It's
like a mouse that's been paralyzed by snake venom or something. It's I almost feel bad for them because they're going to be eaten by a predator.
Yeah.
Because once his hands are on them, they don't move.
I think it was funny that when we started talking about making this list again last week, we were at training camp and you asked me while we were just sitting in the bleachers, who's going to be the number one? And I said it without hesitation was Tyron Smith. Mm-hmm. And I think I almost felt like afterwards that you were kind of trying to draw it out of me, like to see if I would say Dez Bryant, because I think Dez Bryant has been, I mean, Dez Bryant is Dez Bryant. He's amazing. He's one of the best players in the league. I just think that if offensive line play was lauded the way that wide receiver play was, Tyron Smith has just been unbelievable this camp and has the opportunity to not only be the best off at left tackle in football this year, but maybe the best offensive lineman in football this year.
I agree.
So that was the thinking. And I know a lot of comments in the section on the story we're talking about not having Tony Romo as the number one guy. He was number 4 last year too. And listen, number 4 on this team is nothing to shake a stick at. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of really good talent on this team. I just think that if you're talking about where they are in position to other players in their league, that's what you're talking about at this point. At the top 5, top 10, you're talking about, okay, where are they in their ranking in the league? Tony Romo's not the best quarterback in the league.
And I think also the question then becomes, and we phrase the question this way specifically so that guys like LP Lattiser and Dan Bailey
mm-hmm.
could actually be ranked.
Yes.
Because I think that makes for a more interesting exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question that we began with was, given what the position asks this player to do, how well does he do it?
Yeah.
And I think Tyron Smith does what left tackles are asked to do slightly better than Tony Romo does what quarterbacks are asked to do. This doesn't mean for a second that he's more valuable. This is not a most valuable 1 through 90. This is who's best at what they're asked to do, which is why Dan Bailey follows Tony Romo as the 5th best player and was number 3 last year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the guy is really and honestly, this kind of led us to an argument. LP Lattiser got a lot of debate in our thing because he's tough to rank. I mean, the guy is perfect at what he does. Like, he hasn't had a bad snap in years and years and years. So, I mean, how do you rank that guy lower than X, you know? So I think this is what kind of made this top 10 very interesting, is that you kind of knew what players you had it's really about how you rank cross positionally. So I think everyone else in this list is not really that surprising. Sean Lee wasn't on the ranking last year because he was already injured, so we just didn't include him. So he obviously is a newcomer on the list and debuts at number 10, and I think that's probably appropriate for where he's going to be. But this is a, you know, obviously a core of 10 very, very good players. So, all right, let's move on to the next 10. Do you want to go ahead and read that list for us?
Sure. We've got at 11, and I'm actually really proud of this. I like that we came up with
this. This is totally random, by the way. This was not some sort of, you know, PR kind of thing.
But also, I thought arrived at very thoughtfully on our part. Number 11, we have Cole Beasley, followed by Rolando McClain and Orlando Scandrick. Number 14, as we mentioned earlier, is DeMarcus Lawrence. Right after him, Doug Free. Then Terrence Williams at 16. We have Ron Leary at 17. Mo Claiborne at 18. Barry Church at 19. And finishing up the top 20 is first-round draft pick Byron Jones.
So this is where you could make an argument that the talent on the team has jumped the most. You could also make the argument that it's the next 10. But I just really think that if you look at this group, you know, we don't know yet for sure what we've got out of Byron Jones. And Barry Church, I think, in his career has been over and underrated. And it's still kind of tough. When he plays within himself and plays within his position, he does very well. He's a very good run defender, and he can defend the pass inside the box fine. And Mo Claiborne is, to me, the example of the guy who we had to keep going back to the definitions of our rankings, honestly. And Mo Claiborne, I think we can say this. Mo Claiborne was probably one of the most debated guys in this whole list.
Agreed.
It's just this combination of good pedigree, bad pro history, and then good preseason and training camp, well, not preseason games because he didn't play, but good training camp showing. It's really tough because he obviously has the pedigree and we think the ability to be a good corner in this league. I think the expectation for him at this point is to be an average corner because of all that he's been through. I think there's an opportunity for him to maybe even surprise a little bit because, you know, when you mention who's been the best corner out here, his name comes up, you know, for sure, as far as in training camp.
And one of the things you were talking about last night, and I think this is, I agree absolutely with this assessment, is that I think you put it this way, is that the knee injury he had last year in many ways was the best possible thing for him.
He even said that.
Because in some ways, you know, we've heard that he dropped down to 150 pounds in the offseason. Mm-hmm. And so quite literally, he needed to go back to the foundation and to where he was like in high school.
Yeah.
And rebuild his body. And, you know,
his confidence, too.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And his pro career has been derailed largely, if not exclusively, by injuries. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where a nagging injury forces you to compensate, which hurts something else. And he's just had this sort of like concatenation of assembled, you know, illnesses and like, you know, overcompensations.
And they're cascading into each other.
Exactly. And they're cross affecting each other. Yeah. And so I think now that he's finally right, you know, he still has a long way to go, obviously, but as Landon said, he is the best corner in camp. And it's evident when they go to position drills and he turns his hips and you know, they have a bunch of big corners. And the one thing about big corners is they're not as fluid when it comes time to turn their hips because their center of gravity is higher. And he's a big corner. He's 5'11 and change, which is, he's a decent size. And his ability to flip his hips at that height is really impressive.
Yes. Yeah, he's been really great. And, you know, again, we've been trying to kind of temper our excitement because we saw it before last year, too, where he really looked good in training camp and then injuries kind of derailed everything. And then he looked like old Mo and then he got hurt, you know. And so but you know, at this point, hope springs eternal, so we're just going to roll with it. Is there anybody else in this list that you want to point out? I mean, we could talk all day about Rolando McClain, I'm sure, because there's all kinds of varying opinions about him and all that stuff.
I really honestly think we should table discussions of McClain until we see him again. I mean, this is obviously he hasn't played a snap in a training camp, and so this number 12 ranking is really based on
the fact that he was healthy, awesome. He was the best defensive player we had on the team.
He was.
So,
I do want to point out one other thing before we move on to the next 10, though, which is that there are three cornerbacks in this group.
Mm-hmm.
So not only does this group have six defenders total, which sort of balances out the top 20 in terms of there being, I think now we have 10 offensive, 9 defensive, and 1 special teams player,
mm-hmm.
but that suddenly, this position that has been greeted with a lot of skepticism is looking very strong. We have three cornerbacks in this group, and there are actually more to follow. I've done a couple of exercises in the offseason where I've tried to rank the position groups, and cornerbacks persistently up at the top.
Absolutely.
And I think that, you know, an exercise like this shows why.
And the good news, too, right before we move on, is that the two bottom guys, Claiborne and Jones, have showed up at camp. Skandrick has not really shown us as much at camp. We're putting Skandrick here based on, you know, pedigree and what we've seen out of him over the years. We know that he's a good corner, but he hasn't really looked great, and I think it's a part of the nagging knee injury. But Mo and Byron have, like, in camp, looked really good. And Byron, just because all the different spots he's had to play, and he hasn't really missed a beat. It's not that he's excelled so much at cornerback, it's that he's just been above average at every single spot that they put him at. So he's going to be great once they kind of settle him into one, or maybe he's just that piece, that guy that is a, you know, better than average guy who you can play anywhere in the defensive backfield. It's just kind of a movable chess piece. So
in fact, there's a cornerback ranked fairly highly in the next in the next group. So why don't you share the next group with us and we'll talk about it.
Number 21 is Jeremy Mincy. Number 22 is Brandon Carr. Number 23 is J.J. Wilcox. Number 24 is Joseph Randall. Number 25 is Randy Gregory. Number 26 is Corey White. Number 27 is Gavin Escobar. 28 is Anthony Hitchens. 29 is Lael Collins. And 30 is the indomitable L.P. Latissure.
So as I suggested, there are two more corners here. So there actually are five corners in the top 26.
That's crazy.
Which really is a very strong testament to the cornerback depth on this team.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really interesting group because it's there's a kind of combination of there's some starters here who are maybe not the best starters in the starting 22, and there's also some really good, really talented rotation guys. So Jeremy Mincy, who's at the top of this list, not a starter probably. No.
But a key rotation guy,
and he's going to be playing up and down the line, and he's going to have a lot of opportunities to make plays, and there'll be mismatches that he'll be part of, in which he'll succeed in doing that. And there are other sort of interesting, like you were talking about Byron Jones as the kind of Swiss Army knife. You know, the guy who's been playing the same set of positions that they've had Byron Jones playing is Corey White,
mm-hmm.
who will join him in, you know, Swiss Army knifehood.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a couple other kind of Swiss Army knife types here in this group. Guys who won't be starting, but guys who will be deployed all over formations or play multiple positions. And I think two of those that I'm a big fan of are Gavin Escobar and Anthony Hitchens, who come in 27th to 28th. I think that, you know, they may not get a lot of snaps. They may not get a lot of starts, quote unquote, but they're going to get a lot of opportunities to do different things. And by the end of the year, provided they stay healthy, I think we'll look back and go, wow, those guys had some really important contributions. Maybe not headline-grabbing contributions, but a lot of really important contributions.
Yeah, and I mean, looking now, you know, the whole fresh eyes thing, looking now, I do look and see, feel like maybe we have Lael Collins a little bit low just because I do think he is very talented. But at this point, he needs to steady out his game a little bit, and then I think he will fly up this ranking.
I actually like where he is now, but I think one of the things we talked about last night when we did this was, well, he's 29 now. At the end of the season, he might be in the 11 to 20 group.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and I do like the kind of groupings. Like, if you see this Gregory, White, Escobar grouping, Hitchens as well, of four guys who all are going to play a lot, but aren't necessarily starters, right? They're just like a group of super valuable. You don't even want to call them backups because they're gonna find ways to get all four of those guys on the field at some point and to play. And Hitchens actually very well could be the starter at Sam, or depending on how that all shakes out once McClain comes back. I mean, he's gonna probably be the starter at Mike until McClain comes back, and then we'll see exactly what happens once McClain's back, if he gets bumped out to Sam or not. So that's good still. So again, this is a group that has, I think, maybe a lot more talent than they did last year. You know, I think, yes. and some young talent too. I mean, specifically with, you know, Escobar and Gregory still being pretty young. Hitchens is still young. Collins is obviously very young. So it's going to be interesting to see how these guys all grow into their spots, their respective spots, and become better players and even raise, you know, the whole team. It's, you know, the rising tide raises all boats, and I think that's how this group will go too, is that it's got a lot of guys who haven't quite hit their – Joseph Randle you could put in that group too.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. He's obviously going to finally get his opportunity, and so this group could look even better in a couple weeks than it does currently.
You know, the thing that Jason Garrett is always talking about is competition throughout the roster. Mm-hmm. And as you said, rising tides raise all boats.
Yeah.
And so what you really want is you want a bunch of young, hungry guys here who are trying to make a career, who are pushing the guys in front of them. And as we move on to the rest of the list, being pushed from the guys beneath them.
Yeah.
And so when you have quality in your you know, 21 through 30, and then even in your 31 through 40, that's when you've finally done a good job building a roster.
Well, this is, I mean, that's, you got to look at this 31 through 40 group, and you can go ahead and read off the list, because it's interesting how much still there's talent in these guys.
Yes.
You know, like, yeah. Whereas maybe some teams don't have guys this good at this level. So go ahead. Who's 31 through 40?
And certainly some recent Cowboy teams.
Certainly not. Yeah, certainly. Yeah.
And so, yeah. So this is where Will McClay has really been making his money.
Absolutely.
So at 31, we have Tyler Patman, who many people say has been the best cornerback.
He's the other guy that people have been mentioning. Him and Corey White, Claiborne, and Patman have been the guys that have all gotten name recognition as, mm-hmm, when mentioning best corner in the camp.
He's followed by Terrell McClain at 32. Then we have James Hanna, Darren McFadden. Rookie linebacker Damian Wilson comes in at the 35th spot. And then we have our final starter here, which is, you know, the much maligned and impugned
Golden Cock,
still beloved, Nick Hayden at 36. Jeff Heath is 37th. Kyle Wilbur comes in at 38. Mackenzie Bernadeau at 39. And this group is wrapped up by Lance Dunbar in the 40th slot.
You know, it's funny because Dunbar was 15 last year, and I think that's because our expectation for Dunbar was sky high. I mean, because he was catching so many passes. Witten was saying he's going to catch 50 balls last year. Like, he has that kind of game breaking talent. But we've now been through another season where he didn't get the ball very much, even though he did, you know, do a lot of stuff when he did have the ball. And he's injured already again. So I think that has tampered excitement, but I still think that he is still that guy who, you know, can make explosive plays. And outside of that, you got to look. I mean, these are all good, solid, I mean, at the very least, very key contributors or super strong special teams guys like Jeff Heath and Kyle Wilbur. And James Hanna is, I think, fits both of those things, where he's a prized, you know, rotation guy, and he's a strong special teams player. Terrell McClain could vary, and the reason we have McClain ranked higher than
Nick Hayden.
The Nick Hayden is because, sorry, is that I mean, I think ultimately, if he can stay healthy, he's going to take the job. But at the same time, we need to recognize the fact that they've been trying to give away Nick Hayden's job for 2 years, and no one's taken it from this guy yet. So
I think we have him ranked higher for one very simple reason. He's a lot better.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think for sure that he's definitely a lot better pass rusher, and I think he's a slightly... Not slightly worse run defender,
yeah.
But I'll take that slightly worse run defender for a guy that penetrates and can disrupt in the backfield. You know, disruption is, mm-hmm, production, as, mm-hmm, Josh Norris tells us. So, yeah, this is a solid group. I mean, Mackenzie Bernadeau is, I mean, a good guy to have as your swing backup. All these guys, Wilson could end up being a starter at some point.
Could.
I mean, I think they're trying him at Sam, you know, so maybe he might end up being the guy who plays Sam. We still don't know what McFadden is, so this is kind of just based on pedigree and, you know, I guess physical prowess, not so much pro outcome. But, I mean, again, he did play for Oakland. So it'll be interesting to see. Some of these guys we have incomplete information on, and it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
I think one of the things, important questions to ask if you're a front office is, you know, the guys who are in this range on the roster. Obviously, if any of these guys has to start six games, you're probably in trouble. And that's true of any team in the NFL.
Sure.
If you're guys who are 31st through 40th on the roster starting six games, you've got a problem. But what you want from these guys is not only can they play a certain amount of snaps during a game, special team snaps, and give you a couple of defensive snaps here, give Barry Church a rest or something. Mm-hmm. But if Barry Church goes down, can Jeff Heath come in and play a game?
Yeah. Can he finish the game?
Can he finish a game? Oh, wait, okay. Do you feel like you can still win a game with him playing, one start?
Yeah.
Right? And I think most of these guys are not going to be starters. But there's not a guy on this list who I feel like, okay, if the starting strong side linebacker goes down and Kyle Wilbur or Damian Wilson has to come in and play for a game, are we lost? Is there going to be a significant problem there where the opposing offense can exploit it and the defense will suffer? And I don't think that's the case.
Yeah.
And so I feel pretty confident.
I mean, I feel good about Patman coming in and playing. Oh, like, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. You know, so, and McClain too. So once you've and Hannah, like, I mean, I think once you get past Wilson and Hayden, then you start saying, okay, these are guys past 35 right there, 35, 36. That's the area where anything past that, you don't want these guys starting more than one game, but you're okay with them finishing the game. You're okay with them coming in and making contributions, and you're okay with them starting maybe one game but not two games.
I think that's right. So, okay, so let's with the same idea in mind, let's move on to the next group from 41 to 50. Who do we have on that list?
So 41 to 50 seems to be populated by, prized backups, or at least – good to average backups, which is nice. So we got 41, Jack Crawford. Number 42 is Devin Street. Number 43 is Brandon Whedon. Number 44 is Tyler Klutz, who is actually, I think, our lowest rated quote unquote starter, if we want to get technical about it.
In some ways, he shares that starting role with Cole Beasley and Gavin Escobar, the 11th offensive player.
Yeah, that's true.
So we can mash them all together and average out about to like the low 20s.
And the truth is that Chris Jones has not been mentioned yet either, and I guess he's technically a starter as well. So,
fair enough.
45 is LeVar Edwards. Number 46 is Jasper Brinkley. Number 47 is Darian Weems. Number 48 is Andrew Gatchkar. Number 49 is Lucky Whitehead. And number 50 is Jeff Swaim. One thing I like about this grouping that we did is that we started kind of putting similar players together, and you can kind of see this, especially at the bottom. You see Jeff Swaim and Lucky Whitehead. These are both, unheralded rookies. I mean, Swaim was a 7th-round pick, and Lucky Whitehead was a priority free agent. But, these are guys who have from day one shown that they're probably going to make the team, despite not being of the best pedigree, because they put their best foot forward. White had the fumble, but honestly, that's such a drop in the bucket from all the good that Lucky Whitehead has put out there. And it really, I mean, it was a kind of a fluky fumble thing. It wasn't like he was holding it like, I forgot his name already.
Like
DeMarco Murray. Yeah. Other than the rest of these guys, I think are all potentially solid backups. Not great, not guys that you necessarily, again, would want to start more than two or three games, or maybe even two games, but they could definitely come in and get the job done, and if you need them to. Crawford is at the top of this list because I think of these guys, Crawford has shown the ability to make plays, even in season last year.
Agreed.
So he was one of the top sack guys, actually, I think.
And it's so funny that his namesake, Tyrone Crawford, has such a similar trajectory where he's a sort of oversized, mm-hmm. strong size end. They love his size and physicality, but they don't love his get off. He's a little slow footed for
trying to beat a tackle.
This kind of scheme. But they move him inside, and suddenly he begins to flourish because he's strong enough to hold up, but he's dominating guards in terms of quickness. And Jack Crawford, I mean, you can sort of plot his trajectory. He's about 13 or 14 months behind Tyrone Crawford, he looks like Tyrone Crawford during OTAs last year or something.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're very similar. I mean, and Jack Crawford is huge.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, if you see him at camp, it's shocking how big that guy is. I mean, Tyrone Crawford is strong and fast, but when you see him, he's not I mean, he's physically impressive for a guy and on the street, obviously. Right. But when you see him in the context of the rest of the football players, he looks, you know, like a lot of other guys. He just happens to be strong and fast. Jack Crawford looks like a giant even amongst those guys. It's kind of freaky. So and he's got his eyebrows shaved too, which makes him look.
He has alopecia, so he can't grow hair on his.
Oh,
on his
see
head.
Now yeah. I feel terrible, but he still looks terrifying, which yeah, in a good way. Awesome. But yeah.
So one other note about
didn't know he had alopecia.
One other note about
my bad.
One other note about this group before we move on to the last one or to the next one rather. There are two linebackers here, and I think that they're interesting. Interesting guys. One is Jasper Brinkley, who's at 46, and the other is Andrew Gatchkar, who's at 48. And, you know, I think that, and I've said this a couple times, and I'll repeat it because I think it really bears repeating, that Corey White and Andrew Gatchkar, even though they went out and got Greg Hardy and they got some other big-name guys, that it's Corey White and Andrew Gatchkar who are going to be the free agent finds and signings that we look at sometime in December and January and go, wow.
Yeah.
Those were really front office coups because those guys can do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be the kind of guys.
Useful.
They're not going to start and, you know, they're not going to take away your best receiver or anything like that. But they're going to do so many little things. And, you know, when the people in the know do film review, they're going to be like, look at what Corey White did here.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what Andrew Gatchkar did here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, Gatchkar, they're just beginning to unpack what he can do. And we're not going to see a lot of what he can do until we get into games and the special teams are going full tilt bogey. But I think he's going to do a lot. Now, on the flip side of that, we've got Jasper Brinkley, who, you know, you and I talked about this earlier today. If they keep six linebackers, Jasper Brinkley may well be the guy who's on the outs.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's such a sort of interesting situation, depending, of course, on what happens with Rolando McClain and what they feel they need at middle linebacker. If they feel like they need a two-down run stuffer because they don't really have that other than Brinkley, then they'll keep that. But if they feel like that's not necessarily what they need, I could see them cutting him.
Yeah. See, here's the question, and I was thinking about this too, is that is the argument tied to another one tech? Is the argument, okay, if you've got McClain, then maybe you don't need Hayden, but, oh, if we're playing with Hitchens, we need a Hayden.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so, okay, without if we have the two, the big, you know, the kind of Jasper Brinkley, Rolando McClain, big run stuffer, two down guy, do we need that as much of a plugger as our nose tackle than when we have Hitchens who needs kind of that bigger body to keep those guys off of him? Because he has problems with stacking and shedding. So whereas McClain has no problem doing that. So I think that could be the interesting, you know, kind of debate where positional groupings may be based on what else is on the field with them. So it'll be interesting to see. And the funny thing is, we have Jasper Brinkley rated higher than Gatchkar, but I think Gatchkar has a much better chance of making the team than Brinkley does.
I think Gatchkar's in.
Yeah, that's how exactly. Yeah. And I don't know that Brinkley is by any stretch of the imagination in, like, for sure, like, completely solid lock. Mm-hmm. So really the reason it's ranked this way is because we haven't seen a ton of Gatchkar. And I think as far as playing their positions, Brinkley is probably better at playing Mike than Gatchkar is playing at Sam or Will, whichever position he's playing. I just think that we happen to have a lot of depth at Mike, and that's why he's going to get. I think we'll cut Brinkley, and somebody will get a good middle linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything else on this list that you want to on this?
No, I think that's about it.
All right. Why don't you go ahead and give us 51-60?
Okay. 51. We've got Devon Coleman, defensive tackle. He's followed by Reggie Dunn, and then Danny McCray at 54. Ryan Russell, the Purdue defensive end. Ken Bishop comes up next, followed by Ken Boatwright, who you know, may or may not see the field the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Chris Jones, the punter.
Last starter, there you go.
Comes in at 57. He's followed by Joel Ross at 58. Wide receiver Nick Harwell is 59. And this group is finished up by Chaz Green, the offensive tackle at number 60.
Well, right away, Green is basically here based on pedigree and, you know, what we've seen in his college tape. You know, we think he's going to make the team on some kind of level, whether it be in PUP or IR. I think very likely that just because we haven't seen him yet, this is probably a redshirt year for Chaz Green. Reggie Dunn is this high because of me, I think. I mean, I don't know how much you were on the Dunn train, but I love what I've seen from Reggie Dunn, and I just feel like if Whitehead wasn't here, it'd be a no-brainer that Dunn's on this team instead. I just think Whitehead has just been a little bit better and has a little bit more upside in as, because he's, I think he's a little bit bigger than Dunn, which Dunn is, neither one of them are big, but I think Whitehead's slightly bigger and that gives him an advantage. And I think Whitehead's playing more of the coverage teams, which gives him an advantage. But I think Dunn has really showed out as a wide receiver. He gets the ball. He catches the ball away from his body. He runs great routes, really great routes for a guy that should be a burner. Like, you see these speedster types that are like Dunn, you expect him to come out here and look ugly and just basically only win with speed, not be able to run routes. And this kid can run routes. He catches the ball really well. And I think he's a hell of a, he's has the potential to be a hell of a returner just based on his college tape and his speed. So that's
he flashes in position group work and 7-on-7. I think the thing about Whitehead, what he offers, he's better at what the Cowboys need more.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what it is that if they had the room for him, they should keep them, but they probably won't, and because they don't have the room at that point. So yeah. Devin Coleman, here's the deal. I think Devin Coleman and Bishop have been tied together, obviously, because they kind of came in at the same time, similar positions, similar profiles, but they play and win in different ways, which is interesting because Bishop is more of a power guy, and he's really started. Bishop has actually kind of made a late push here lately, but Devin Coleman, all off season and all last season, the whole thing with him is the kid's immature. He needs to, the light needs to turn on for him. He needs to understand that this is not a game. Like, he needs to understand his level of potential and then play to it. From what we hear and from what we've seen, it seems like these last few weeks it started to come on for him a little bit. Yeah. And honestly, I love his potential as a nose tackle, because if he could play the nose tackle with his quickness and use that bull rush, because he really, where he excels is using that bull rush and quickness. I mean, now you've got another nose tackle who can actually rush the passer as well and is athletic and you would want to keep on third down, So I'm rooting for Coleman to continue to rise, because I think that if he can get his head straight and get it all together, he provides a valuable skill set, pass rush, at a position where we currently don't have a ton.
Yeah, remember Booger McFarland?
Exactly. Yeah, I lived in Tampa during all that stuff, and Booger McFarland was as, I mean, if you ask people in Tampa when all that was going on, Booger McFarland was every bit as valuable as Warren Sapp because of his ability to take on double teams, and then on top of that, also beat double teams for a pass rusher.
So you didn't just have one interior pass rusher; you had two guys who could have pushed the pocket.
Well, what it did is it allowed you to not try to over scheme to double Warren Sapp, because that's the way you stop this under tackle, right? Is that you figure out a way either by taking away from the defensive inside, which you usually don't want to do, or taking away, having the center not block the double team the nose tackle and go over and hit the under tackle. But if you've got a guy like Booger McFarland who will just destroy the middle of your offense, if you do that, then you can't be afforded that opportunity. So it's an important position in order for you to get disruption on the defensive line. Anything else on here?
There's one guy on here I really want to talk about, and that's Ryan Russell.
Yeah.
Ryan Russell,
we had a tough time because we you and I kind of were ranking him and then trying to figure out exactly where to rank him, like as far as position,
Yeah, what position he was playing. So the first thing we did, just so everyone understands what Landon's talking about here, is that first thing we did was we stacked everybody in terms of their position. So we ranked all the safeties from top to bottom. And then what we would do is we'd pick whoever the top was on each group, so we'd look at the best of whatever positions, were left, and then pick those guys off of there. And the one place we got stuck with Russell is he a defensive end or a defensive tackle?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we ultimately decided he's sort of the one guy right now who's both, although there are several other players who are sort of both. You'll notice that Ben Gardner's not on this list yet. And I think that a lot of us were seeing Ben Gardner as a kind of strong side end who could go inside and give them some pass rush at tackle. And I think he's been usurped in that by Russell, who is much more dynamic. Russell has actually shown himself, especially in the last week when, like Coleman, the light has gone on.
Yeah.
He's shown himself to be very dynamic.
And the coaches are coaching him
hard.
It's very hard. Maybe as hard as anybody on the team.
Yeah. And that's always evidence that they believe they have something.
Absolutely.
And so I think Russell's going to make the team, and he's going to be like the sort of like ninth or tenth defensive lineman. He'll get a few snaps, but he'll be like Jack Crawford was last year,
yeah.
where you see him play a little end, you see him play a little tackle. He's going to rotate up and down the line. You know, it depends on who's dinged, but that he's now becoming the kind of player who in 2 or 3 years you can see being a dynamic force.
And last thing before we go, Ken Boatwright, obviously we loved what we saw from him last year. We're just hoping that the guy's okay. It sounds like he is. He's been released from the hospital, but we haven't heard any update on his status. So his ranking here is basically based on, you know, pedigree from – he was obviously very well-liked in Seattle, and we loved what we saw – a little bit of what we saw last year with him. So that's why he's there. And then the other two guys worth mentioning are Ross and Harwell, both of whom I think are grouped together because they're both guys who have shown us some stuff and probably another year would be candidates to be dark horses to make the team. But unfortunately, they're at spots that positions that are so deep that – they're getting kind of buried at a spot where they're not going to be able to earn a place on the team. But I think both Ross and Harwell should and probably will get picked up by somebody after cuts. They both have shown enough, at least to me, that I think that they deserve it to play in this league.
Yeah, I think Ross is the kind of guy who would have made the team in 2012.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, when they were really looking for, you know, they only kept like 3 or 4 corners.
Yeah.
So I don't think it would necessarily be the best practice to read all the next 30 guys.
Yes.
Right? So we basically have been saying for a while now that the Cowboys have roughly 60 NFL players on their roster, which is a good problem to have, right? Because they're going to be cutting NFL players. So rather than read all these guys and the 61 through 90 group, are there players on this list who you think either A, will make the team, or B, are fit this description of these guys are NFL players?
Of 61 through 90?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's actually, there's one or two guys who I think have potential to make the team. I think you can make a pretty good practice squad out of these 61 through 90 guys.
Sure can.
So let's use that as the minimum, right? More than that, I think there's a couple different guys. First of all, I think Ray Agnew, and the reason I'm bringing him up first is because he could be a starter at fullback for some other team, but it's just, you know, supply and demand at fullback. There just aren't a lot of teams that are using fullbacks regularly, and he happens to be signed to a team that has a guy that they clearly just prefer. They like Klutz. Mm-hmm. Klutz has become kind of a utility player here at camp, even doing a lot of running stuff. Honest to God, if they don't pick up another running back in the next few weeks, I would not be surprised if you saw Klutz as the running back in there when they would do S11 and mm-hmm. S12. They've been using him a lot as a pass protector, and he's good at it. He understands the system.
And he's got a little bit of wiggle, so it's not like you eliminate all threat of a run.
I'm just going to say this, Ravel. We saw him run the outside zone on goal line and scored with a nice little, you know, shimmy up to the tackle. He looked like it as good as DeMarco Murray did. I mean, I'm not selling him. No, but he did. I don't know that I would ever run him on the outside zone, but he did it, and he got away with it. So I think the point is that he's got enough running back skill to kind of be a all-star light, maybe, you know, like, I mean, just kind of an H-back that happens to be a fullback. So, you know, I think he can catch the ball and pick up a couple extra yards if they had to dump it out on him. But anyways, we should move on to the guys. But of the other guys that are on this list who I think that could be on this team or on a team, I think number 63, Shane McDermott. I think he has – I think Tim Scott and John Wetzel also look like they could just because of the dearth of offensive linemen and safeties in the league, they could probably get picked up somewhere. I was really hoping Tim Scott would show us a little bit more and then possibly make this team.
I was too.
But it just never happened. I think Lawrence Gibson, who we have down at 72, still has potential. I think he will probably be our practice squad guy, but he's just not very good right now. Antoine Goodley, we didn't get to see anything with that kid. And unfortunately, because he had some skill set stuff, but I don't know that even with what I've seen from Baylor, he would have been better than Reggie Dunn or Lucky Whitehead, and I think they're similar players.
I agree.
And except – I think, honestly, I think Antoine Goodley would have been, You know who Antoine Goodley actually reminded me of? His College Tape reminded me of Greg Little. He's this guy that's like a running back, built like a running back playing wide receiver, and really has no business playing wide receiver. So it's like you give him the ball quickly and then let him kind of go. I mean, I think there's usefulness because those guys are dangerous with the ball in their hands, but how many of those guys on the team do you want, really? So maybe he could have been a special teams guy. I think who else? Who do you see in this list? I think, first of all, number 80, George Farmer, is the guy that we were talking about who got cut this morning that happened after we made this list. Right. I just want to point that out, too.
I think the thing that we do need to talk about here is the fact that we don't have any other quarterbacks on our list thus far. And so,
I guess we should talk about that.
Our third string and fourth string quarterbacks, we purposefully lumped them together at 69 and 70. Right now we have Dustin Vaughn at 69 and Jameel Showers at 70.
But we both agree that if they're keeping a third quarterback on this team, 100% it should be Jameel Showers and not Dustin Vaughn, right?
I think that's right. And so there's many reasons for that. One is that I don't believe that what Dustin Vaughn lacks can be taught.
Uh-huh.
I think that he doesn't have a good pocket awareness and he's afraid to step up in the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how you can – I mean, that seems to be one thing that you can't coach.
It's very difficult without a lot of reps, I would say.
It seems to be that just a natural gift that somebody has or doesn't have. And Jameel Showers seems to be more decisive. There's a lot of mechanical things that he needs to work on. But in terms of, you know, there were several times in the Chargers game where he would take a 3 or 5 step drop and throw the ball at the end of his drop.
Yeah. The problem that I have with Vaughn in general is that his tools don't match his strengths. And actually, unfortunately for him, his tools matches weakness. Mm-hmm. Which is weird. He's tall, but doesn't step up in the pocket. So basically, what's the point in being tall anymore? And he has a strong arm, but he's too afraid to throw the ball. You know, he can't see the routes develop downfield, or he doesn't keep his eyes downfield, so he doesn't throw the deep ball. So what's the point of having a strong arm? And so, what's happening is that, and listen, if you follow me on Twitter, and Rabble kind of chimed in too, you saw a whole bunch of people going after me about Dustin Vaughn. They really believe in Dustin Vaughn. And I think part of this issue is that we've seen Vaughn a couple different times make plays in situations where he didn't do necessarily the right thing. And again, I keep bringing this up to you, so I know Rabble's sick of hearing it, but that play where he rolled out in the preseason and he threw that ball to Escobar, I don't see a guy, you know, I didn't see a guy escaping heavy pressure and making a play. I see a guy who was flushed out of the pocket by really nothing, because at that point Collins had pushed the guy that was scaring him past the pocket, so all he had to do was actually just step up like we've been saying, and he didn't. So he rolls right, if you want to call it rolling right, and more like kind of stumbled right, like a drunk like a drunk giraffe, and then he throws a kind of a duck ball to Escobar on the move, who was wide open. Mm-hmm. So if he had put the ball on Escobar goes another 15 or 20 yards. So yes, ultimately he got the first down and hooray for him, and that's great, but at the same time, like, there was opportunity for him to do much, much more if he'd just played within himself a little bit and just been a little bit more pocket aware and kept his eyes downfield. So,
and I think the other thing to add to this is the fact that Showers at this particular juncture is playing on all of the different special teams.
Yes.
Units. Now, I who knows what that actually means, but I think it's very interesting. So he's playing as the up man in the kickoff return. He's actually, he's playing on the, he's not the gunner, but he's like the next man in on the kickoff return. And so I think if you're going to keep a third quarterback, but that guy can also contribute in special teams, that's a pretty great thing.
Yeah, exactly. Cause the key word in there is if. Like, I mean, you and I are both completely not 100% sold on keeping a third quarterback, because there's a lot of talent on this team. We just listed like that top 60 group, and you got to cut 7 more of those guys in order to get your team down. So do you really want to keep a guy, guy number 70, where are they?
79 or 8?
79 and 8.
Or 69 and 70.
69 and 70 because they play a position that, right, you don't have as many people. Jameel Showers, if he can provide special teams, advantage, Okay, then that you've bought yourself a year to develop as a quarterback, and if you can at least provide good special team stuff, we'll keep a guy that's a special teams ace if he's also a quarterback, because that there's usefulness there. But otherwise, I'm not keeping Dustin Vaughn space warm because we had him last year on the team. It's just not enough right. for me to it's not enough for me to waste a roster spot.
Right. So because he's 6'5" and 240,
yeah.
does that make him more valuable than Tyler Patman?
240. Come on now.
I know.
That guy's
right.
220 soaking away. Let's be
he's
true.
240 when he was like, you know, wearing ankle weights.
His knees may weigh each 240.
But does that make him more valuable than Tyler Patman? Does that make him more valuable than Jeff Swain?
Absolutely not.
Does that make him more valuable than maybe even Reggie Dunn?
Not to me.
You know? So we can go on and on. Does that make him more valuable than Ryan Russell?
No. No, because, I mean, this, and again, and Dan is, who's going to be in here, you know, tearing our 1 through 90 list apart not too long, you know, like Dan brought up, when Roma went down and we were playing Arizona and Whedon was coming in, they were desperately trying to get in another quarterback to back up Whedon. Well, I mean, what the hell? I mean, if that's the case, then what the hell is Vaughn doing? Unless he's a developmental guy, I understand that. But at this point, we've given him a year. He hasn't really improved all that much. And we need his spot. I'm sorry, dude, but we need that spot now, you know? So it's like, this is not a free ride forever. Unless you got to show us a lot more than what you've shown us in order to maintain your spot when we've gotten that much more talented. I'm not cutting a talented sixth corner just to see if you can, you know, play flag football another year and possibly get into enough games to eventually be a career backup. Right. I mean, the guy, to a certain degree, if a guy's got it, you know, pretty quick. Romo looked crazy inaccurate all kinds of times, but you could still tell there was something else there. You know what I'm saying?
Moxie.
It had some kind of moxie and some kind of unmeasurable moxie. Yeah. That.
So I think there has to be something that the team sees that we're not seeing.
Yeah.
If they're going to keep him.
If they are going to keep him, yeah. I mean, that's certainly it. But at this point, just based on what we've seen, or at least I can only speak for myself, what I've seen, I can't see a way that he makes the team.
Nor I. I'll tell you what, that's a great place to end. Why don't we stop there, and then we're going to bring our good friend Dan Turner in, and he's going to tell us a little about what he's seeing at camp, and then he'll take his machete to our 1 through 90 list.
We're going to bleed, bleed, bleed.
Put your neck on my head, home again, burrow, tra-law. It's coming by bus or on the ground,
to welcome the great Dan Turner into the studio. Dan, thanks so much for sitting down with us.
Thanks for having me back, guys.
So for those of you who don't know, Dan is an Englishman who is a member of UK Cowboy fans and was instrumental in the whole London week last year. He was writing for the DallasCowboys.com site. He wrote the Across the Pond series, and he's actually been asked this year for training camp to extend that series back across the pond, where he's been writing a series of posts for the DC.com site on largely on the rookies. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's just been sort of following the different rookies around and interviewing them, and just especially Efrey Obada, but the other ones as well.
And so Dan is actually a wonderful story. He decided last year after he graduated college that what he wanted to do, and as a way to celebrate that, was to come out to Cowboys training camp. So that's when we met him last week, last year. And of course, we became fast friends immediately, because anybody who would do something that crazy is someone near and dear to our hearts. And so Dan's been here through the duration of camp this year as well. And so we thought, because he's also a very smart guy and a shrewd analyst of football, we thought it would be great to get his impressions on what he's seen over the last, I guess, what, week, 2 weeks or so. So the first thing I'd like to do is just sort of ask general impressions. What are some of your takeaways about the 2015 Cowboys from what you've seen thus far on the Oxnard Fields?
I think it's almost a little bit boring this year. But I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way, but I just mean that as in, like, last year we came along thinking that they were probably going to be a bad team, but that they actually could be a really good team. So there were so many different facets to it which we just didn't understand, whereas this year pretty much everyone who we have we do actually understand. Like, even many of the rookies, we sort of already know what their roles are going to be, and they're just we're going to the different training sessions every day, and the same people are excelling, the same people are doing badly. So, I mean, it's been a little bit, it's been a little bit boring. But at the same time, it's almost the same thing, which I imagine you probably are going to see from the Seahawks camp. I imagine it's going to be the same thing which you're going to see from the New England Patriots camp. And those, and you actually want to have that instead of looking like going to like the Jaguars camp, where I imagine probably some days are fantastic and some days are terrible.
I actually have had the same impression, so I'm really pleased to hear you say that. Several people asked me the first week what I thought of camp, and I think in some ways this is a great problem to have. This is like the NFL equivalent of first world problems, right? Good teams don't have a lot of roster questions. There's no Romo watch. There's no Garrett hot seat. You know, I mean, this is what happens when you have a smart organization that has a lot of continuity among its coaching staff and a lot of philosophical continuity. There aren't these kind of burning questions. So, you know, honestly, if we imagine there's a starting 26, how many of those start? I mean, you know, with you know, defensive substitutions and the 11th man on offense playing, you know, there's several guys playing that role. How many of those positions are really up for grabs? How many of those positions are going to be taken by guys who are new to the team?
I actually don't think there's going to be that many, really. I mean,
nor I.
In fact, it could actually be zero. I don't think that Randy Gregory is going to be starting this year. At one point, I actually did think he would when Greg Hardy was suspended, but I think it's probably going to be Jerry Mincy now. And I think, in fact, I think probably the most likely to actually start the season might actually be Damian Wilson. Although I don't think he will start the season, I think he might be the most likely to start there. But even so, I still feel. I mean, people might say that the linebacking core is still undecided, but I feel pretty confident that it's going to be Sean Lee, Anthony Hitchens, and Kai Wilbur in week one. So really, there isn't that much really to.
Exactly, and we know what Lee can do, and we saw the other two guys playing alongside last year. So I think that this is one of the reasons why we might be having this kind of experience where we think it's a little bit boring. I mean, maybe instead of boring, the word we should use is anticlimactic. Mm-hmm. You know, because I mean, I enjoy going to camp every day. I'm not bored per se, but in terms of, you know, for guys like us who are Cowboys nerds who love solving the roster puzzle. It's like we woke up in the morning and our little sister came in and did the first 480 pieces of a 500-piece puzzle for us. So there's, you know, there's not a lot to go on.
It's kind of weird because as bloggers, you're sort of half fan and half reporter. And so the reporter side of you that wants good storylines and stuff to report on hates this training camp, right? But the fan of you that wants a good team that is steadily improving and has talent at the top loves this because you're seeing, okay, all these spots are contested with good players. I mean, we're in a good shape to go into the season. So, yeah, it's kind of a weird place to be torn at this point, just because you want it to be boring, but you're also hoping for there to be a little bit more excitement so that you had something to report on. Your daily reports must just be excruciating at times because they all look the same a lot of times with these practices because not a lot of huge stuff. There's not huge injuries happening. There's not, you know, huge roster movement happening. So.
Well, it's interesting because we're now actually back to the Cowboys' tents, obviously. And it's interesting because they're obviously writing like the game recaps like you do. And they're always sort of saying, so who were the standouts from today? Oh, Tyron Smith. Well, I've had Tyron Smith for the last 3 days. So I can't have him. Cole Beasley. I've already had Cole Beasley every single day since I've been here. Dez Bryant. I can't have Dez Bryant. So it's almost like that's another thing as well, that like, there isn't the same people are dominating every single day.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, we want to, like, everyone's desperate to see Greg Hardy succeed, but at the same time, he's not going to succeed as long as Tyron Smith is doing what Tyron Smith does. And is that such a bad thing that Tyron Smith is dominating out here?
And we talked earlier a very similar set of matchups between Tyrone Crawford and Zach Martin. Mm-hmm. When they go head to head, sometimes Tyrone Crawford looks like he's being neutralized. I mean, he's won his share of those battles, but for the most part, he looks like he's not an all-pro caliber defensive tackle necessarily. And then you see him against the Chargers and you say, oh, you know what? Actually, he's very good. This is about Zach Martin being excellent.
Yeah.
So one of the games that we play all these kind of like, let's talk about the roster games. And one of the games that you and I actually played, I think last week when we were having a post-practice cocktail, was the ranking the various position groups game. And I think for the sake of that game, you and I, if I recall correctly, we divided the offensive line into interior and exterior, and we also divided the defensive line into defensive tackles and ends.
Yeah.
So we might not have to go through every position, but what's your takeaway now in terms of the way this roster is constructed? What are some of the stronger position groups? And then maybe we'll talk about, like, what position groups would you put like on the bottom two?
I think interior offensive line is definitely the best one. Not just because of the starters. I mean, by the way, they have two all pros there, and Travis Frederick and Zach Martin. But it's just the fact that they have depth there as well. Like, Leo Collins isn't going to start this year. And Mackenzie Bernard out. I mean, there were worse starting guards and there were worse starting centers in the NFL than Mackenzie Bernard out. And he's the fifth mm-hmm. on the Cowboys' depth chart of three. So I think that has got to be by far the best.
I agree.
And then after that, I mean, it gets quite close, I think. But, I mean, you could probably make an argument that defensive end is there, just purely because of the depth which they have again. Because I think at this point in camp, we can sort of look at the starters and be very happy with them. But there are going to be injuries this year. And I can absolutely guarantee that every single position group, there are going to be injuries at different points. So the positions with depth are always going to be the ones which are the strongest positions. So at defensive end, where you have... I mean, like yesterday, when Tyron Smith was obviously sitting out, you saw Randy Gregory absolutely dominating. Like he was, you should have seen his hand movements. And he actually looked like Greg Hardy with his hands in the way that he was ripping underneath inside. He was winning with his outside swims. He was countering. I mean, he probably had four snaps and he won with four different ways. Mm-hmm. And Randy Gregory isn't even on the top, probably in the top three defensive ends on this squad. And then you've got DeMarcus Lawrence, who I still think is going to have the most sacks of any Cowboy this year.
I think he's the most improved player on the roster.
I'd have to agree. I mean, he's up to 270 pounds now, and he's actually quicker than he was when he was 245 pounds last year. And that's just astounding, really. And when you actually look at him as well, you actually look at his eyes, he looks fierce. Like last year, he looked like a rookie. This year, he actually looks like he wants to hurt people. It's almost like he gets to Romo in the team periods, and he is absolutely desperate to just drive through Romo's back and put him in as much pain as possible. But you can, so I just can't wait until we get out into games and he's actually allowed to be given some more license there.
And you know, the thing about that is that one of the other guys who's going to be at the very bottom of that list, if he even makes a team, is Ryan Russell. And he's actually, the last week or so, I think been excellent. He's had some really great snaps both inside and outside. So I agree. It's a very, very deep group. How about, do you have another position that is hovering at the top, or do you think it'd be best to move on to the groups that still need a little reinforcement?
I might go down to the bottom now, and I think probably running backs are probably at the bottom, because I mean, I keep hearing this thing about like that you shouldn't trade a cornerback or an offensive guard because one of these guys might get injured. Well, I think it's much more of a concern that a running back could get injured here. If Joseph Randall gets injured, then I think it is a bit of a disaster. I mean, Lance Dunbar has looked good out here, but first of all, he's injury prone. Second of all, he isn't a feature back. And Darren McFadden, I just don't know Darren McFadden. I don't think he's... I think they might try and find a way to replace him on the roster. I just think they're going to have to do something to get another running back in here. Because even after that, the likes of C. Strunk, Gus Johnson, Ben Molina, I think all these guys are just camp bodies or practice squad guys. So as much as we try to think that the running backs are fine, and as much as we think that Joe Randall is good, because Joe Randall is good, it's going to be a huge concern if Joe Randall gets injured this year. And I just think that if that happens, then that could be the end of the season. That could almost be as important as Romo or any of the big players getting injured.
You know, I've been thinking all training camp that they're going to make a trade for another back at some point. I mean, I've been supremely confident about the running back situation, largely because I just believe it hasn't been resolved yet and that it will be, and that the front office is willing to spend a decent draft pick and maybe combine that with a player or some combination thereof to get a back that can make us all sleep at night. Mm. Any other positions that you think, ooh, boy, I wish we had a little reinforcement or maybe a better player or two there?
Actually, I probably should say, actually, I think the worst position group on the team is safety. Mm. Just purely because I think Jones and Corey White are primarily cornerbacks here. And the issue with safety is we don't actually have a free safety on the roster. I mean, JJ Wilcox this year, if you actually look at him in coverage, he is getting so handsy with these tight ends. And so, I mean, he's gonna draw penalties all year. So this guy shouldn't be... I just don't trust JJ Wilcox in coverage. Barry Church actually looks better than he did last year. But I still think he's just primarily in the box safety. And the Cowboys are playing a lot of cover three and cover one this year. So you need that guy back there. And they just have absolutely no one. And even if JJ Wilcox gets injured, suddenly you've got Jeff Heath. And like, I don't mind Jeff Heath, but I think he's a special teams player. And And in fact, I would go as far to say that so far the only safety who has shown decent range so far is Tim Scott, who's an undrafted free agent. I don't even think Tim Scott's going to make the roster, but that almost tells you what I think of the free safety position, which is just going to be so important if we're going to play cover one or cover three this year.
I agree. Okay, so taking this discussion of the different position groups, we would now like to kind of shift it slightly, similar exercise, but taking away the idea of groups, I guess, to your assessment of our exercise from last night where we ranked the Cowboys roster from 1 to 90. I know you've had a chance to take a brief gander at it. I'd love to, you know, since you're the kind of guy who probably engages in these kind of intellectual exercises as well, I'd love to hear what you have to say, a few takeaways from our exercise about guys maybe you think we ranked a little too highly or conversely a little too low.
Well, I generally agree with you. I mean, I think Tyron Smith is the best player on the roster at the moment. I absolutely love Dez Bryant, but I think that Tyron Smith so far has been on a different echelon to anyone else here. So I think you got everything right at the top. I'd say the first one, which I do disagree with, is that with the rookies you have Byron Jones ranked ahead of Randy Gregory, and I think from what we've seen so far, I almost think that. I mean, you've got Greg Hardy ranked at number six, so you're obviously thinking that he's allowed to. You're almost making an allowance for Tyron Smith there, but I think Randy Gregory deserves exactly the same allowance.
Nice point.
And I think Gregory's probably better than Jones at the moment, and I think that he's probably going to see more time than Jones this year. And it's just when you see him against these lesser offensive tackles, or even in the game the other day, he's going to make a huge impact this year. I was even able to speak to him, and you can just tell there's just something about Randy Gregory that just tells me he's going to be special. And I think exactly the same about Byron Jones, but I think Byron Jones might need a little bit more seasoning. And I think Byron Jones, they're probably going to use him more as more sort of just to cover the tight end. So it's almost just like a particular role for him. Whereas I think Randy Gregory, you can probably play on, you can probably use in more situations. And I think the other one, which obviously I'm completely biased because I'm an Englishman, but I think you've got Jack Crawford also ranked too low. I mean Jack Crawford so far, he's seen time at the three technique. He's seen time at even the nickel one technique as well. And I think he's going to make a huge impact this year. I mean, I would say that he could get to four or five sacks this year, maybe even more, because he may not be the best player on the Cowboys roster by any means, but he's absolutely perfect for Rob Marinelli. And I mean absolutely perfect. Just the fact that he gets off the snap so quickly. Mm. It's the reason why Rod Marinelli absolutely loves this guy, just purely because he's such a quick twitch player, and he gets through the gap straight away, and he's just perfect for the three technique role there. And in fact, he's even been giving problems to people like Zach Martin so far and Ron Leary. So I think it's going to be quite exciting to be able to see Crawford 58 and 98 at the rotating at the three tech this year.
The Crawford
brothers. So this is interesting that you say this, because earlier on when Landon and I were talking about the roster, one of the things we said is that Jack Crawford is on the Tyrone Crawford trajectory. Mm-hmm. You know, starting as a big strong side end who might not have had the quickness to succeed against the more athletic right tackles in the league. But has the frame to add a little bit of weight and tremendous strength. And once he kicks inside, suddenly he's beating guards. And so the assessment that I think we came away with is that he's on the Tyrone Crawford trajectory, but he's about 13 months behind Crawford. Hmm. So like he is right now what Tyrone Crawford was maybe at the end of OTAs and minicamp last year. Hmm. You know, which actually is a really wonderful prospect for Cowboys fans, because that means we have another one in the hopper getting ready to develop.
Yeah, what it also means is that his contract is up at the end of this year, so in a way it might be good if he only sort of breaks out
right
this year.
Right,
and then you can obviously re-sign him again to a bit of an extension, then let him properly break out next year.
That's tough, because if he has that big season you're talking about where he gets six sacks, suddenly he's going to be big in big demand.
Well, especially since Tyron Crawford's contract is up at the end of the year too, so yeah. You may have to make a decision on signing the whole law firm up. So
maybe his brothers, maybe you can give them a joint contract.
Right, right, right. Okay, so a couple of last questions before we thank you for your time here. At this juncture, who would you say is most likely to be a surprise cut? Like someone that many people think is probably a pretty surefire roster hit, but you think actually maybe a cut in when they get down to 53.
I'm just trying to think, because I don't like to give the same sort of answers as other people here. I'm just trying to think of someone who might be able to do it. And I...
This is the toughest question. This was not a tough question last year. This is a very tough question this year, I found.
Yeah.
Rav's asked me a couple different times, and I struggle each time, because it's not... It seems like the lines are pretty well defined at 60. Like, I mean, after the top 60, those guys are clearly not eligible. But those top 60 or so players, it's tough. And then trying to come up with a surprise in there is...
I'm going to cheat a little bit here, and I'm going to say that I'm going to give you a surprise trade instead.
Ooh, nice.
Just something which I've actually heard personally, which I think could happen, that's Tyler Patman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he's not on the trade block. They're not trying to trade Tyler Patman, but if they can get a starting running back or a good running back for Tyler Patman, I think they'll do it. And I think that Tyler Patman is too good to be number six on the depth chart here.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, although we'd love to have the depth of him here, I just almost think that having the depth at running back is more important currently than having a number six cornerback.
I agree. Even though, you know, Jones and White will be seeing time at safety still. That's not enough to justify a sixth corner and a very, very thin running back core.
Mm-hmm.
So let's switch gears now. The final question is the opposite now. Who is a surprise keep? Is there someone who people aren't going to necessarily predict making this final 53 who you think actually has a pretty decent chance?
Okay, well, I'm going to give a name out who... Okay, I'm just going to say, I think Jameel Showers could make the 53-man roster. Maybe not as a quarterback, because I think probably Dustin Vaughn is further in his development than Dustin Vaughn. But if you actually... Than Jameel Showers, sorry. But if you actually look at Jameel Showers, he's playing on every single special teams unit at the moment. And he's playing with the first team on every single special teams unit. Rich Bisaccia absolutely loves this guy. So I almost think that... With Dustin Vaughn last year, you basically had a 52-man roster with Dustin Vaughn there. Now, with Jameel Showers, you can have a 53-man roster, because maybe this guy won't become a quarterback in the NFL, but you're not wasting a spot by having him on there. I mean, when you actually look at him, he actually looks like a linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got the size. He's extremely athletic. He's willing to tackle. He made a touchdown-saving tackle in the first preseason game. So it honestly wouldn't surprise me. And by the way, as a quarterback as well, he's a guy who I sort of want to develop, because he doesn't get me wrong, he's raw in a lot of areas, but the fact that he has such great pocket poise, the fact that he is able to sort of avoid pressure, keep his eyes up, step up into the pocket and risk getting hit to be able to make a throwaway, to be able to make a throw, I absolutely love that in a quarterback. It's just one of my personal things. So I think that I would almost rather develop Jameel Showers and have his special teams prowess on the team than have Dustin Vaughn there.
I just had the biggest epiphany while you were talking. Dustin Vaughn is Greenberry and Showers is Beasley. We had this conversation about how, you know, if you were to design a wide receiver, you know, Greenberry would be the guy, right? He's 6'1", 220-ish, right? And can fly, but he can't play wide receiver worth a lick, right? Cole Beasley is the opposite. He's 5'8", 185 pounds.
If that.
And the guy can flat out play a wide receiver, right? And I kind of feel like that's what we're seeing with Showers. Is Vaughn is all physical potential, but no, like, oomph to his game. Whereas Showers is actually showing something, even though his makeup isn't quite correct for what you would expect a quarterback to be.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, he's athletic, so he just happens to have that bonus ability to help you play special teams, which makes him valuable.
Another thing which I love about Showers, by the way, as well, is that when you actually speak to him, Dustin Vaughn gets sort of very excited when you speak to him, and he's an interesting interview. But Jameel Showers is completely calm. Like, for someone who in 3 weeks' time could be out of the NFL forever, or in 3 weeks' time could make a 53-man roster, you expect this guy to be absolutely petrified. But he has this aura of calm about him. Mm. And to me, that is another quarterback. That's another thing which you want in your quarterback. So I just like Jameel Showers. Sue me.
No, listen. You're preaching to the choir here. We actually had a very similar conversation about this, and we concur absolutely. Dan, listen. Thanks so much for taking the time to sit and chat Cowboys with us. Great stuff. Thanks so much for sitting and talking Cowboys football with us. We really appreciate it. For those of you who don't follow Dan on Twitter, you really should. He's a fantastic Twitter follow. Very knowledgeable. Very well informed. His Twitter handle is at DTS Turner. That's at DTS, T-U-R-N-E-R.
And also, Dan, what's the website, the draft site that you're running as well? Give him that real quick.
Yeah, I also run a draft site with loads of different scouting reports and stuff on. And it's www.nfl-draft-zone.com.
draft-zone.com, and it is fantastic. His he's just getting his scouting feet wet, and this is a guy with a lot of upside, people. Dan, thanks again, we really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Great stuff there from Dan. It was good to get another opinion on your exercises to see, kind of to check your work a little bit. But his British right. his British bias did kind of shine through a little bit with Jack Crawford, I think.
As would be expected. I guess the only thing that I'm surprised by is that he didn't come out against LP Lattiser, because you know how much the British hate the French.
That's true. So when are we podcasting next?
We're going to be going in the middle of next week. I think we'll be really well poised there to talk about the second preseason game and also to preview the third and most important preseason game.
Well, until then, guys, make sure you're hitting up Blogging the Boys for all your info about that, and go to their Facebook page, Blogging the Boys, and follow them on Twitter at Blogging the Boys. And until then, happy trails, folks.
Happy trails, everyone.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together?